I'm sorry about your daughter, Joel.
I'm sorry about your daughter, Joel. But I have lost people, too.
But I have lost people, too.
You have no idea what loss is.
You have no idea what loss is.
Everyone I have cared for has either died or left me. Everybody, fucking except for you. Don't tell me that I would be safer with someone else, because the truth is, I would just be more scared.
Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into a storm of spoilers, a podcast currently covering The Last of Us Season 2 and split into two sections. The first section of the podcast we called The Calm, and we will not be discussing anything that happens in The Last of Us Season 2 beyond the first episode called Future Days. But we will talk about the first season and the contents of that episode. The second section of the podcast we call The Storm, as in a storm of spoilers, and this week we'll talk about some adaptation changes from the video game, The Last of Us Part 2, and speculate when and if we're going to see some major story points based on the This Season On teaser. We're not ruining, we're enriching, and we're not infected yet. Why, hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez.
And I'm Neil Miller, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you back to a storm of spoilers. I also have the honor of doing some housekeeping. Our upcoming schedule, of course, we are on The Last of Us Season 2. Our episodes drop every Wednesday. That is hopefully when you're listening to this, or you know, maybe you're listening to it later in the week. It's up to you. The podcasts are on demand. That's how they work. But these are going to go live every Wednesday. We'll be back next week, of course, with episode 2. And as a reminder, if you are looking for those video game spoilers, that sweet, sweet stormy business, I have been streaming. I started this past week every Monday evening on Twitch, twitch.tv/NeilStradamus, NeilStradamus. Monday evening, starting around 8 p.m. Central Time, I'm streaming The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered. That was a lot of fun this past week. I won't tell you what happened, but I streamed about 4 hours into the game and cried at least twice. So it was a fun time. Thanks for everyone who joined. My most watched stream so far in my streaming career. So we're having a good time. And also, if you would like more from Dave and I, you can join us over on Patreon and patreon.com/DaveAndNeil, DaveAndNeil. Is the web address. We've got our weekly pop culture adventure episodes. Those drop on Fridays. You get access to our wonderful Slack, which is the most delightful place on the internet, especially now that most social media platforms have gone to shit. And that is available to members at all levels. And if you sign up at the highest level, the $10 plus level, you also get access to a very fun project that we're on right now, which is our Leftovers watch project. Dave and I are watching The Leftovers from Damon Lindelof. Maybe you've heard of him. For the first time ever, for us, at least. So,
and that's a good thing to notice, because there is a non-zero chance of me saying The Leftovers, meaning The Last of Us, at some point during the run of this podcast.
Yeah, we just kicked in this past week to season 3, so we're steamrolling in. Also, at that level, you get access to our previous rewatch of the entirety of Twin Peaks, which was a very fun project. So lots of stuff on that Patreon, including all of the back catalog of bonus material from our Game of Thrones and our Lost era stuff, everything that we tease in this Storm of Spoilers feed going back almost a decade in our travels with Joanna Robinson. So that is where you can find all of the good stuff. Let's move on to the current era with a little segment we talked about this already, /send a raven, which involves how to get in touch with this show. You could send a raven, which some folks have been doing, to stormofspoilers@gmail.com. That is, you can send your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams, your pleas for life advice, if you need to our show, and we will answer those here on the air. We've got a couple of them. I've got one for you to open up the calm, or before we get into the calm, Dave, and then I've also got one that we will talk about when we get to the storm. Don't worry, I will keep those going, funnel those to where they need to go so that we don't accidentally spoil anyone. We're very good at this at this point. So yeah, make sure you hit us up, stormofspoilers@gmail.com, with any thoughts that you may have. You can also review us, since this is a public feed, and that is the best way to help the show get to people. On iTunes, you can rate us, I believe, on Spotify or whatever app you use. Make sure you leave us a 5-star rating, as is the rule, and then you can say whatever it is you want. Dave, I'm happy to report, at least according to my Apple Podcast app, which apparently is what it's called now, it's not really iTunes, that many people have said nice things about us and given us 5-star reviews over the last week. So many people that I was not even able to scroll through them all. So thank you very much to everybody who left us a review. Please keep them coming. That helps us get the word out there on the pod and, you know, makes us feel good about being here, including I'm going to read one here from Trevor B, who says, "Love Dave and Neil's energy. Glad they're back in the SOS feed. Simultaneously, I'm conducting my Lost Plus 20 anti-binge rewatch, rewatching every Lost episode exactly 20 years after the original air date and listening to SOS back catalog. Yes, it'll take me through 2030, but it's bringing me immense joy." First of all, Trevor, how dare you remind us that it has been 20 years since Lost aired. But, you know, I guess you're only really just giving us the truth, but what a project to do it exactly 20 years. I commend you on your restraint and your commitment to the bit, and wish you good luck going through that project. And I hope you enjoy the entirety of the Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast, which can be found in this very feed, a very enjoyable podcast. If you enjoy Lost, and if you'd like to hear Dave and I and Joanna Robinson go through the pandemic all over again, which is a real fun project.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, Dave, we had at least one person who, again, gave us 5 stars and otherwise seemed very excited to have us back, who suggested that we could use a little estrogen on the podcast, which I believe does not mean that one of us should begin taking hormone replacement therapy. I believe it means that we should be seeking out a third co-host of the female or non-binary variety, to which I say that is fair. And we're kind of on the lookout, friends. You know, we're out there scouting. We don't think that this will be a Dave and Neil only forever thing. And, you know, stay tuned, I guess, on that front.
Yeah. Also, if my doctor says I should take more estrogen because I've been through the transitioning process, I will absolutely take more estrogen. Like, I listen to my doctors about my health care. That's sure. Not my current situation. But if that is what that person meant, like, fair enough.
Sure. I
believe in the scientific process and doctors.
I'm not a big fan of the American healthcare system, but I do still believe in science. And if the pit has taught me anything, it's that classic television model is still alive and well, and that doctors are still great. So
yeah, they're still trying.
All right. I would like to begin, before we jump into the column, with an email once again to stormspoilers@gmail.com. This one from Phelan, who is a longtime emailer to our show and to Trial by Content, our former show at The Ringer. And here is what our verbose friend Phelan has to say. Sorry, I had to cut this down because, as we know, Phelan likes to talk, or at least type.
We know. If this is your first introduction to Phelan, this will not be your last time you hear from Phelan.
But this is a great email. So I wanted to start, and this is going to lead me to a very important question for Dave and I, which I think is a good place to start the season. Phelan says, "I am a Joel defender. As someone who has buried both my loving parents, endured far more than my share of loss, and is now a father myself, I completely understand the instinct to sacrifice your own soul so that your child might live. The Fireflies were perfectly prepared to trade the life of an innocent girl for a chance to, quote, save the world. But when you're a parent, your child is your world. Faced with that imperative, I can't say I wouldn't have attempted the exact same thing. As far as he's concerned, Joel saved the world by saving Ellie and condemned himself to hell by doing so, if you believe in that kind of thing. Telling Ellie the truth would have been akin to seeking absolution, which I don't think he's asking for. But in telling her the truth, he would have He would be transferring the weight of his sins onto the shoulders of his child, which is not what you fucking do. He lied to her and carries that guilt alone, and in doing so, gave her a chance at adolescence, free of feeling responsible for the atrocities required to make that life possible. I disagree with Joel that he's a, quote, good man. I don't think he really believes that either, but he is a good dad. That may be bad for humanity, but the only reason Ellie has the luxury of being angry with him or feeling anything at all is because he did what he did. For that, I feel like the man deserves just a little fucking latitude, especially when he thumps a dude for being a homophobe. And this leads me to an opening question. It is relevant to where this episode opens, which is a return to the final moments of season one, which is, do you think Joel did the right thing in saving Ellie from the Fireflies? Dave, I think I'm on record multiple times at this point in saying that I think Joel was right to stop them because, one, Ellie was unable to consent to the surgery that would, you know, would have, I guess, removed her brain and killed her. And I think that's a huge, huge piece of it. But also from, as Phelan rightly points out, from Joel's perspective, like losing Ellie is sort of losing his world at that point. And compounding that with the previous loss of his daughter, I think is just too much for this guy. So do you agree with that?
Man, I love this as a way to kick off the calm because I do want to contextualize it, not only in last season, but in sort of how we reframe this story as we head off on like this second batch. Because I hear what you're saying and I hear what Phelan's saying. And I think especially that feeling tracks really well with season one of The Last of Us, where it was basically the question of like, especially in the father-son relation, but just basically any sort of or father-daughter relationship, but also in sort of non-directly genetic relationships, like how far are you going to go to save somebody that you love? And how far, you know, are you willing to maybe go outside of whatever group you're in, whatever authority that is running your life in order to save the one you love? And I think season one really built to us through its various stories to be ready to be on Joel's side. And so I really like that we start this season by revisiting just the moment where he lies to her and just Bella Ramsey's, their performance last season, getting to revisit at the top of this season where they say, okay, after he swears, but there's a very real possibility that they're not buying this bullshit. And then we jump ahead to see sort of the consequences of that in their relationship. And I do think that while I was on Joel's side in season one, I think here in season two, the more we see that there may not be in this world, in this post-apocalyptic world, a violent solution that ends the violence. A violent solution might just perpetuate more violence. I think that at the in a couple of episodes, I'm going to be, you know, much more on thinking that Joel maybe made a selfish choice. There are some hints around the edges of the dialogue of this episode that some other stuff has happened. We had Catherine O'Hara show up as a show only character, is my understanding, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Gail is new.
And she mentions Eugene, which I saw a lot of people being like, what if this is a Eugene Levy callback? But I'm like, Neil has prepped me about the guy in the picture.
Yeah. Eugene is not a new show created character, although Eugene had a wife in the game. But so far, Eugene in the show has appeared just about as much as he appears in the game. He only appears in photo form in the game.
So but obviously hearing that story that, you know, somehow Joel killed Eugene in a way that Catherine O'Hara's character acknowledges might have been right, but
sure,
this might have had something to do with, I don't know, keeping the Firefly secret, getting his position in the community. We see a little bit from Joel about sort of like a yes for me, but not for the refugee status. Now he's in charge of sort of making more space in Jackson. So although
do you have a Eugene theory?
Do I have a Eugene theory?
As far as like why Joel killed Eugene? I don't know if there's a right answer. Obviously, the video game doesn't have an answer for this. My initial guess was something happened and Eugene got bit and Joel had to kill. That would be the reason why Gale would be like, I understand why you had to do it, but I hate you that you still did it.
I think they could make it like a big thing, like somehow Eugene got notice of what happened with the Fireflies and tried to call bullshit on Joel and Joel just stood his ground. Because I'm trying to think about, can he do, because I feel like, I mean, this is either going to be something that comes out at some point or we're going to get like a whole flashback episode like we did in episode one. But I feel like we have to cover a little bit of that ground. Especially because I believe like there needs to be another complicating instance between Joel and Ellie than what we've seen and what we've heard tell. At least it seems like Joel isn't ready to tell the secret to anybody else. So I don't know on the show if he's told Ellie yet, but I do think there has to be one more step of complication. Or, you know what? In terms of just what's in this episode, that might also be me making the Joel mistake and not letting a teenager be a teenager, because I don't have kids, but I do have some experience watching extreme behavior in teenage girls for my television job, and unpredictable mysteries like all teenagers are. And but also it seems like Ellie has really sort of embraced sort of like her capability to not only be her own person, but sort of like commit her own violence and have her own relationships when we pick up in season two. What other things should I notice that have changed this episode from what you were expecting, having already played the video game?
There are a few things that kind of stuck out to me. One is the fact that Joel is now an uncle. Seems very relevant. The fact that Tommy and Maria have had their kid. We knew this, right? In season one, we knew that Maria was pregnant.
I believe so. That seems like it, because that's why she sort of had to stay out of the action a little bit more. Yeah. Is my understanding.
So this is a change from the first video game and the second video game, is that Tommy and Maria have a kid, which I do feel is obviously a relevant and motivating factor potentially for both Tommy and Maria in the way that they will make decisions about Jackson and about, you know, whether they will, how much they will want to protect Jackson, how much they will be concerned with things happening outside of Jackson. It puts a much stronger focus on keeping the walls of Jackson strong, right? And keeping the people inside of the Jackson community safe. And I think that the show has done a really good job of establishing the remoteness of Jackson, right? Like we get in the final shot of this episode through the eyes of Abby, who we'll talk about here in a few minutes. How remote and isolated this community is. But what I also find fascinating is we also see through the cordyceps in this utility pipe that gets smashed, how potentially vulnerable it is, and how the infected are getting a little bit closer. And that feels like the show sort of promising us that we should be on alert for things to be escalating around Jackson. And I think that Tommy and Maria having a kid is a concern for sure. So I think that's a pretty big one for me. The other one, Dave, is kind of a fun one in the game, when they get to the grocery store, Dina and Ellie and the Alpine Run crew, it is a moose and not a bear. But
interesting,
we also don't get the great barbecue pun from Dina, so I think it's totally worth it to change it to a bear. instead of a moose. Because
well, this is a
there's
perfect
not a
time,
moose
yeah.
becue pun.
This is a perfect time to bring up Dina, played by Isabella Merced, who I was basically unfamiliar with up until Alien Romulus happened.
Oh, really? You've not seen Transformers The Last Knight?
I have not seen a lot of Transformers movies, and I'm aware of what happens in Transformers movies, sure. But no, I don't think I saw it. Was she the one that had the Romeo and Juliet law?
No, she
exercised against.
She
her?
Was in okay. the one with Sir Anthony Hopkins. She played like a little kid who befriended. She had a Transformer friend. She was like living in a junkyard.
She does
ends
not
up
ring a bell
like tagging along with Mark Wahlberg as they go and save the world from King Arthur's robots. It's a very silly one. I've seen all the Transformers movies, so yes, I was familiar with her work. She also played the live action Dora the Explorer.
Oh, I am aware. I'm vaguely aware of that. Well, but as much as I am as Transformers The Last Knight, I'm aware it exists. I vaguely know I'm aware of the plot, but I did not watch it. I really think that she is probably my MVP of this episode. She's definitely mm-hmm. the most exciting performance, even though I love Catherine O'Hara giving a good meaty monologue. This is a character that I know we talked about looking forward to a little bit in season one and maybe thought we got a little peek at her peaking somewhere in Jackson, but I sense the showrunners and Isabella herself has said that that's probably wasn't her, which mm-hmm. fine. But in terms of like with all of these characters, especially this season, I'm really looking to who could sort of match what Bella Ramsey's putting out as Ellie, because I think her performance and Pedro Pascal's performance are just so anchoring. Like they were really able to recapture those characters from the game. And I was like, Dina's going to be a tough one. Like mm-hmm. I think Storm Reid was a tough one last season. But just finding two young actresses capable of finding these different layers to it. And I am just psyched at Dina in the game. I'm very happy with her scenes with Joel. And I am super happy with her chemistry silent hunting with Bella, Ellie eventually in the grocery store. I watched the making of the behind the scenes, the insights into the episode. And I saw Craig Mazin talking about the New Year's dance scene and being like, you know, I could like choose the angles and, you know, dress the set, but really it's these two actors. And I'm like, I've seen this clip of the game. I don't think he really chose the angles or dressed the set.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I agree. Isabella Merced is a great Dina. And I think that there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on two of the casting choices, I think. And it was Dina and it's Abby. Again, we'll get to Abby here in a minute. And we'll be talking about her all season. But I think it was also a high bar with Dina, because the Ellie and Dina dynamic, as this episode shows, is extremely important. It's an extremely important relationship in this season. And I also think that the choice to move up this New Year's sort of jamboree scene, the game, as the second game opens, they talk about it. Like you go on the run with them, basically the Alpine run, and they're talking about what happened, but you don't actually see this until later in a flashback. So like, in a sense, the adaption choice they've made is to move it up, which I think is really good, because it's a very sort of obviously important emotional point for both of these characters. Right. And, you know, it's a visually sort of stunning moment. And I think that, yeah, it's very cool that they basically shot for shot, like the shot of. That they ultimately had to do like handheld instead of a crane shot of the camera coming down behind Ellie that shows all the lights, literally the dancing shot as she's watching Dina like twirling, and she's like kind of, you know, she's drunk or high and she's like spinning out of control. Those are all exactly the same choreography as the game. You know, Seth's homophobic little quip I guess, is Seth plays out the exact
same way. Seth
being
a certain percentage of The Last of Us fans when this game came out, if my memory served me correct.
Well, and it's, you know, it's interesting, too, because I think Neil Druckmann has talked about this, you know, when they made the game, about how Seth is meant to be sort of a representation of the homophobia of 2003. And it's interesting because, you know, when you think back about, he's meant to represent like sort of the stunted nature of culture in this world, right? Even though it's like 2029 or 2030 at this point, that like the apocalypse sort of put culture on hold. So like 2003, culture was far more homophobic than it is now. Obviously we have still a ways to go as a society, but we're far more, rough around the edges back then. So I think, you know, it's interesting. That's a slur you don't hear a lot anymore in 2025.
That's true. Or at least not as an unreclaimed version of that word.
Yeah, exactly.
I strangely hear it reclaimed a lot, which good for them.
Yeah. And I actually kind of enjoy seeing that actor, Robert John Burke, who I feel like plays a cop, like a Boston cop in just about like every TV show these days, or has played a Boston cop in like 9 million TV shows. He's just one of those that guys. So I'm curious to see what they do with Seth, because he doesn't really have a whole lot to do beyond being this guy. And I think Craig Mazin has teased that maybe there's more to Seth. But, you know, we'll see.
The show is going to be like, oh, you want to see this? Too bad. Seth episode.
Is there
all going to have to care about
is
Seth
there a
for a
Seth
week?
Redemption episode coming? I mean, he's a good actor. Maybe there is more to do with him. Maybe we can teach Seth how to be more tolerant of the world. And maybe we could teach some. No, we're not going to be able to teach those idiots who complained about the video game. They are lost at this point.
Yeah, we're going to have to see what happens if they even pop up for the show. It feels like they've lost that war, but we'll find out, I suppose. That'll be fun. Speaking of the way other people have been reacting to the show, I've seen a couple different interpretations on the scene between Dina and Joel talking about the fuse, just in terms of how it's going to work for television. So basically, a piece of metal heats up, curls, that's what sort of breaks a circuit breaker so you don't set fire to your walls. Now, I've seen some people being like, this is subtle foreshadowing that maybe they're going to have to set fire to part of the town to clear the cordyceps that we see in the pipes. And I've also seen this interpreted as that Dina might be the sort of a breaker for the Joel Ellie relationship. Did you have either of those interpretations, or an interpretation all your own as to who's going to be the fuse in this meta monologue by Joel?
I mean, honestly, not really. I thought it was just there to show us that there is sort of a warmth between these two characters.
All right.
I had not begun digging into the thematic relevance of the fuse just yet. I guess it's worth digging into because of the fact that we see the cordyceps in the pipe at the end, and connected to going underneath the wall. And then, you know, we eventually see maybe some infected coming toward the wall. You know, obviously there's a lot of fire in the trailers, both the look ahead and the season 2 trailer. So maybe
could go either way.
But my brain is very much still on the video game, which has a lot of Molotov cocktails in it. So I'm like, I know how to start fires in this world. it revolves around putting a rag into a bottle filled with alcohol and lighting it on fire and throwing it. So
that's a pretty classic. That's a pretty classic way. Yeah. Speaking of throwing bottles, let's talk a little bit about our action scene for this episode, as we get to go inside a supermarket and hunt down some clickards. I saw some people very excited about throwing bottles. Could you explain that to me, Neil?
It's a huge mechanic in the game. One that I'm actually very bad at, which is throwing bottles and bricks to distract clickers. I mean, clickers are a huge enemy in the game, both games. And, you know, Ellie does it. Ellie and Dina do it here in the grocery store. And like the idea that you would take a beer bottle, because they're all over the place in this post-apocalyptic wasteland, and toss it so that you would draw in a clicker, which cannot see, remember, not like a runner, which a runner is the kind that can see and will see you and chase you and try to bite you.
Run right at you.
Yeah. But you draw the clicker in, you sneak up on it, you stab it in the head or the neck. And that allows you to stealth kill it without having to fire a gun, which would, you know, if you fired the gun, it would attract other clickers. So I really enjoyed this scene, not just for the throwing of the bottles, but also showing the sort of 5 years later level of experience that they have in killing the infected, right? As opposed to, like, remember the museum scene in season one and how terrifying right. that was, and how even Joel and Anna Torv's character were unprepared for. Even they were pretty good at dealing with clickers, but, you know, at that point Ellie had never even seen one. So here we are, 5.5, 6 years later, and they're pretty much pros at taking down a couple of clickers pretty much one on one. And I think that is an important element to remember in season two, is that they have sort of leveled up their survivability and they're much, much more formidable. So I think that what that promises us as the viewer is that the other side is going to have to level up a little bit too. We're going to get some more formidable infected, which I think is what leads us to the new kind of infected that we meet. Dave, are you excited for new infected?
Oh yeah, a stalker, I believe.
Yep. I think this is a big one for video game players, because there are different levels. There's in the video games, there's 5 different levels. We're not going to talk about all of them, but we've only met a couple in the show so far. We've met the runners, obviously. Those are the most humanoid ones that can see. They run quickly. We've met clickers, which are the sound-based ones. We met the bloaters, which is like the big dude that came out of the hole in Kansas City. And now we've met a stalker, which are the ones that seem to have a level of intelligence and does not charge Ellie. And she even says, it's like, it's stalking me. And I think that is a fascinating development. And obviously now Jackson is going to be sort of on alert for these stalkers. And it presents a whole new level of challenge for the humans in trying to survive in this world. And I thought it was especially gnarly, like the little cordyceps things coming out of their nose. It was pretty pretty cool.
There were where the nose was supposed to be.
Yeah. Shout out to Barry Gower, the makeup effects master from Game of Thrones, who has worked on both seasons of this show and is still crushing it.
I only would have liked it more if it got to kiss Anna Torv again. But I do love the effect of the cordyceps reaching out towards somebody. I am also excited to see a new team of people that I assume we're going to have, multiple interactions with on the Jackson side. Mm-hmm. We obviously get to meet Jesse, and it seems like there's might have just recently been dissolved love triangle there, but definitely some professional respect amongst them in the town, which I'm very excited about. And then, of course, we meet Abby at the beginning, and a character who I'm told through subtitles and the credits name is Owen. I don't believe those are spoilers, but they pop up not only at the very beginning of the episode, but at the very end of the episode. Caitlin Dever, mm-hmm. love seeing her pop up in this. I'm a little concerned that her mean face isn't conveying enough mean. But I do really appreciate some of the parallels we've already just begun with, especially the association where it's like, for Ellie, drafts were the thing that brought her out of the funk from season one of having to kill David. And here drafts are in the background of probably Abby's worst moment of her life. You have seen like a very different Abby while playing the game. What do you think of this television version?
Well, I mean, so far so good. I think they're doing a good job of conveying that Abby is like next level upset about what happened. And and conveying that she is there in the aftermath of Salt Lake City. Obviously, she's looking for Joel, and she knows that he's handsome, which is very important. Caitlin Dever, there's obviously meta reasons. Very excited. If you've ever seen Justified, she's so good on Justified. Fantastic. Similar reasons for young Mizuno, who plays Jesse. If you've seen the Netflix show Beef, he's fantastic on the show Beef. So like just really great casting as far as like acting talent on this show. The casting department is doing a fantastic job. So I think there's reasons to be excited beyond what I know from having played the game. So I don't want to obviously get into that here in the calm, but I think there is plenty to learn about Abby's journey, but I think this is a good way to sort of set it up. I think we know what we need to know, right? Abby and her group are obviously devastated by what happened, by what Joel did at the hospital.
Yep. Fireflies are gone, apparently, or effectively gone.
Yeah, they were part of that group, and they're the only ones left, and they were ready to go after them immediately. And for whatever reason, it took them 5 years to find Jackson. So like you can already start to piece together how much angrier Abby probably is over the fact that it's taken her 5 years to find Joel, or at least get near. She hasn't found Joel yet, but like to get anywhere near Joel. Yeah. So
or what has she been doing before she got to Jackson trying to get near Joel?
Yeah, the questions are abound. Like, what have they been doing? Did they go to Seattle? What happened in Seattle? You know, what has transpired since then with this group? How has their dynamic changed? How has their commitment to the promise that Owen made her, right? He promises that he's going to help her. You know, has that waned at all over time? Right. It's been 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's a long, long time. And, you know, how committed is the group at this point? Right. Like, is that promise forever?
We see Abby and Owen at the beginning and the end of the series, but at the end of the episode, they have more people mm-hmm. with them. I just can't tell if they're the same people even.
Sure.
There's definitely more in there, and I feel that she's a threat, but I also feel they're dropping a lot of hints in dialogue that these stalkers could be an indication of like a larger herd too. So I wonder if they're going to have to infiltrate Jackson, or maybe a herd drives him into Jackson. I'm very excited because if I have threat assessment, I definitely have Abby on my watch, mm-hmm. But there are some closer threats at hand. Mostly the pipe, but also the possibility of a huge horde somewhere out there.
Yeah.
Like I've seen zombie cinema. I know hordes are horrible.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we've seen HBO shows do this in the past, especially in episode ones, if things are about to jump off real quick in a season, where they set up multiple fronts of threat to a particular location. And this episode does a really great job of ending in a place where Jackson is potentially under threat by both encroaching levels of infected, and Abby and her crew are now right above them. So, you know, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous for the people of Jackson.
Yeah. I don't want you to spoil anything, but when I was talking about like fun characters that we met, there is one you put in the notes that I forgot to mention because I'm scared that we should care about this character, but Shimmer the mm-hmm. Horse.
Hell yeah.
We're paying attention to Shimmer the Horse. Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, Shimmer
makes me scared.
directly adapted from the game. Shimmer is Ellie's horse. Very important character to me personally. Multiple animal characters that are important. One that was left out, I will say. One Easter egg that I thought was great. If you noticed on the wall in the grocery store, the employee of the month for July is a dog. That is a directed adaptation from the game. It's a different picture of a dog. It's not the same dog. I wouldn't be surprised if that picture in the show is like someone's dog from the production.
Who wouldn't
put their dog in the in their show? You know, like you know how James Gunn. This is like a Warner Brothers thing, I'm sure. So like, I love that they put the dog in there as the July employee of the month. That feels very authentic to me. I love the moment where Ellie stops and calls out that it's Shimmer as the horse, because, you know, Shimmer is your horse in the game. The other one is that there is a moment in the opening of the game as Ellie is like walking to go to like get the horse and go out on the patrol, where she stops and pets a dog. And it's the point in the game where it passes the can you pet the dog in this game test, which is nice. Like the most important for any role-playing game in my opinion. But the show obviously didn't want to adapt that, and I think that's a huge missed opportunity. And I think for me, if I were like writing a review, I would knock it down like a half star for not including Ellie petting the dog in the town. So points off Craig Mazin.
I mean, also smart adaptation of a training sequences, basically teaching you about sniper drop off into an actual character moment between Ellie and Tommy.
That was great.
So like,
it's a good addition. That's,
it gives and it takes new. Away.
Yeah. And also there's a really great in the game as they're getting ready to go out for the Alpine run. There's like a snowball fight with some kids. I hope we get a snowball fight at some point.
How many kids are in Jackson would seem like an interesting thing to tease us with, especially if Jackson might be doomed. I don't know. I need
more Happy
Thrones
stuff
pilled
in Jackson.
Yeah.
It's a little dour in that town right now.
I mean, just for us, just for our characters. Like, Dina's having a great time. That's part of why I love watching her. She's just having a good time, trying her best.
She's making jokes. She's
making up puns. She's making
lively.
Original puns. I love coming back to that. Dina, MVP.
She's a good balance for Abby, who is deadly serious so far.
Very, very serious.
She's going to kill him slowly.
Is there anything you think we need to cover before we move into the storm? I assume that we're going to have more time to talk about Gale and Catherine O'Hara in the future. Do you assume we also have more to do with that character?
I mean, I think so. Why would you waste Catherine O'Hara? I think she's...
That's my assumption.
Her monologue is fantastic. I think it's a great... it's a great way to sort of bring out that emotional moment for Joel. And I think that she just crushes it. I love the nod to Eugene being the weed master. I hope we explore that a little bit more.
I'm into that.
Weed still like very much exists in this world. It's just great.
I like having a character say out loud that if you don't say the problem, you can't heal the problem, because that's our episode's big issue. And so it was really great to have Gale say it out loud. I know that like therapists in HBO dramas have been a bit of a cliche for like decades now, but it works when it works. And I think this is an example of actually doing good. And like for example, it's something like Daredevil Born Again, which also has unbelievable therapy on right now. This reads as like two people just trying to make the best of it with their professions, post-apocalypse. It's much different than, relationship therapy in the MCU. So I'm in it for Gale. I'm in it for Catherine O'Hara. I'm kind of sad she isn't on the council. The council looks cool. I hope I get to learn a little bit more about them.
Maybe she's a little unstable for the council, though. She is a therapist who's like day drinking.
On her birthday after her husband died.
I guess that's true. The other thing I really like about this scene, though, Dave, is that it gives Pedro a chance to really come out swinging. I think, another thing that I realized in my game replay is how amazing Troy Baker's performance is as Joel. Mm-hmm. Like the Joel parts of the beginning of that game are so strong, because, you know, Joel's 5 years older. He's obviously gone through a fair bit of tumultuous parenting with Ellie over the last 5 years. They've had some tough times. He's been holding on to the guilt of what he did. And you just get all of that in his face. And I think that as I'm watching that scene in this episode, I'm like, this must feel so validating for the showrunners to be watching Pedro act this out and be like, yes, we made the right choice here. Like, we picked the right guy. We nailed the casting of Joel with Pedro. He's just so fucking good.
Yes. Well, let's say goodbye to our calmies as we transition the storm. We'll be back next week with more calm thoughts. Until then, we're going to move into the storm.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last.
It's a storm of spoilers. We're here for the first time with actual content. Did we mess up in the calm at all? I think we did okay.
No, I think we did okay. I mean, I obviously teased the number of infected that there are, but we didn't say the other two kinds, Dave.
We didn't say the other two kinds.
I didn't say shamblers, and we didn't say Rat King.
I almost said I was worried about Shimmer because you frequently told me that one of the most difficult parts of this game is when you are forced to kill a dog. So
sure.
Let me just start this for myself before we get to all this excellent content you have planned for us. Is Shimmer going to be okay?
I can't promise you that Shimmer makes it like through the entire story, but I will say this. I played 4 hours of the video game this week. Shimmer remains alive, and we're well into Ellie being in Seattle. Okay. So like Shimmer lives far longer than Joel.
Okay, well, I can at least hold on to Shimmer for a little bit.
I'm sure something terrible happens to Shimmer and I've like totally blocked it out, but like completely removed it from my memory, but it's not gonna happen anytime soon, so we're okay for now.
All right, maybe season two Shimmer's okay. That's yeah. gonna be my hope.
Yeah,
Shimmer Watch begins.
I don't, it's not like a Treyu situation or anything.
Well, we just love a horse on this podcast.
We do.
My eyes are on the horse.
We love a horse who gets a name and is important to a main character, and Shimmer is that horse. on to my storm content that I have planned for us.
Yes.
We're going to start with a slightly stormy email from Swati, who was so kind as to email us stormspoilers@gmail.com. You can email us stormy things if you're in this segment listening to us. Here's what Spidey has to say. She says, I have a feeling a big change will be that Tommy and Maria are pregnant. So what if Tommy doesn't go to Seattle, or goes but doesn't rampage like in the game? In the game, Tommy becomes such a villain, drawing Ellie away from the farmhouse with Dina. Maybe they don't go that far with Tommy, or maybe something happens to that baby and it provides Tommy even more fuel for revenge. I like this. Theory. Obviously, we, you know, the spoiler part of this is Tommy going to Seattle, which is something I was reminded of in playing the game, because after Joel is killed, mm-hmm. and Ellie is like, I'm gonna go find Abby and her crew, because the scene where Joel is killed is so horrific, I was reminded this week, and because Ellie's there. It's by terrible happenstance Ellie ends up like witnessing it, and Tommy is also there, but he doesn't witness it because he's like knocked out. But Tommy ends up being the person who leaves first and heads for Seattle. And I think the fact that they have a kid, right? We found out they were pregnant at the end of season one, and then we meet the kid, and he's hanging out with his Uncle Joel in this episode, could be a big swing for the show in either keeping Tommy in Jackson or getting Tommy back to Jackson sooner, which I think could lead to Svati's theory of maybe not making Tommy such a villain. I also think, Dave, that them setting up the stuff with the wall and the pipe and more infected coming to Jackson, and especially like there's some stuff in the next time on trailer or the coming up on the season trailer, it just looks like we're gonna have a lot more to do in Jackson than it the game like is that. Interesting, because the game just like the shit happens to Joel, Ellie and Tommy go off, Tommy goes off, then Ellie and Dina go off after him, and then we're just in Seattle for like the rest of the game for the most part. And yeah, we kind of forget about Jackson. And I don't think the show is going to do that. I think the show is like, we're establishing these characters. We're not going to waste Rutina Wesley. We're not going to waste Catherine O'Hara. I feel like we're going to spend a lot more time in Jackson. And whether it's Tommy comes back sooner or Tommy doesn't leave, that might be one of the big adaptation choices of the season.
Do you think Tommy's a big enough character that if we do follow Ellie as she goes to Seattle and Tommy stays, that we can do like a three-hander, like two in Seattle, one back in Jackson? Is there enough story to tell there?
I think so. I do think Tommy kind of does have to go to Seattle at some point, because there are sort of climactic moments. Well, I mean, there's sort of climactic moments that happen in the game later in Seattle that involve Tommy and Jesse, who we've met now, being in Seattle. But I think that they could sort of potentially remove Tommy from that equation and just have Jesse be there. Because like Jesse comes in after, like he comes after Dina and Ellie. It gets involved in the Seattle storyline sort of after they've been there for a while. And eventually Jesse and Dina sort of get out of the equation, and Ellie goes on her quest of revenge against Abby on her own. And that's the point where like Tommy leaves and goes back to Jackson. So I think you could maybe do it without Tommy running off, but it would be kind of weird for Tommy to not want revenge against Abby.
Do you save it so Tommy leaving is what ends season two and like all the season three stuff has to happen because Tommy gets there?
No.
Like, it just depends, because if that happens, he has to stay back to protect his kid and then the kid dies. So like, I'm not rooting for that.
Sure.
But I am wondering if how they're planning to pace the season, given how much backstory it looks like we're going to need on some of these people. The thing I also think I didn't say is like Catherine O'Hara's husband, Eugene, is Joey Pants. Like, you know, we're going to have a whole flashback about what happened there. I feel almost positive, because it's not, you don't hire that caliber of actor to be in a photo in a pot growery, which I believe is how he pops up in the game.
Yeah. I do think, looking ahead at some of the episode titles, and this is dangerous territory trying to predict based on episode titles, but the episode 7, the series season finale, is called Every Last One of Them, which is the vibe. Basically, Ellie goes through the game in Seattle and she's like very slowly picking off Abby's friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets them all before she gets to Abby. So like, maybe she gets all of Abby's friends at the end of this season. And at the end of this season, she splits off, like Jesse comes to Seattle, takes Dina away, and Ellie goes off on her, and it's Ellie leaving on her own to go finish what she started with Abby. I don't know, because at that point that's when Tommy would go back to Jackson. But maybe if Tommy's already back in Jackson, other shit has already gone down. I just feel like maybe they're going to give us like a whole new storyline in Jackson, where like Jackson is being attacked, and maybe there's like, maybe that's how they find ways into some of the flashbacks about Joel. Oh, that's tough, though, because a lot of that is from Ellie's perspective. I'm okay, very curious as to how they're going to weave together the potential of, like, if they decide to keep Tommy, if having a kid keeps Tommy and Jackson, and they're going to give us more Jackson's story, where does that go? Because he does it in the game. He does end up back in Jackson. But, like, he does a bunch of bad shit in Seattle. Like, he tortures a bunch of Abby's people. It kills a couple of them. Like, he does some pretty gnarly shit before returning to his family, or his wife, at least. But he also doesn't have a child.
So it looks like, if we're looking at the season two titles on IMDb, which, as Neil said, risky proposition. It says, like, episode 5 is called Wolves, so that's like a flashback to Seattle, right? I would assume. Mm-hmm. That's where we're going to get some Jeffrey Wright and whatnot secrets. That feels like it could be the flashback, which this episode 4 could be the flashback of what happened in Jackson before. But, like, it could be anything. There's so many secrets on this show. And I guess, Neil, we're dancing around it. You think Joel gets it next week?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what ground needs to be covered if that's true?
Okay. So we talked about this last week in the storm about how they could push it to later in the season. And I thought that there was a way where they, you know, maybe do a little bit more of Abby's backstory first. They give us some flashbacks and sort of set up. But I think once I saw that they were going to do the 5-year time jump in this episode, once it seemed like they were absolutely doing the same pacing as the game. And then once I replayed the game, the first couple hours of the game on Monday, man, it happens 2 hours in to the game. It's so insane. It feels like it's imminent, right? Like, here's how it plays out in the video game from where we are in the show. So Abby's crew is now right outside of Jackson. They're going to hole up in this house that is basically within visual distance of Jackson, so probably about a mile away from the city. Joel and Tommy go out on a patrol in the morning, the morning after the New Year's dance, literally in the game. And Abby goes out. Owen takes Abby out to see Jackson. This is actually the first time that this is a change. The first time that Abby sees Jackson is, like, Owen wakes her up in the morning and is like, let me show you something. And so they, like, climb. You play as Abby. This is wild in the game. So, like, you're playing as Abby. You're following Owen. You get up to the top of this cliff and you see Jackson for the first time. And she's like, we got to go take a look. And they're, like, discussing how they're going to do it. And Owen's like, well, I'm going to go back to the house. And she's like, I'm going to stay up here. And she ends up, like, being like, well, I'm going to go now and try to get to this house. And she, as she's, like, trying to get to this house to, like, scope it out more closely, this other house that she sees where the lights are on. And as she's going to this, she encounters some infected, and you have to, like, fight off these infected hand to hand. You only have a couple of bullets, which is very annoying. And this snowstorm starts up, this huge storm, and she gets caught up in this storm and she gets chased. And eventually she's just, like, running from this horde of infected, right? Horde of infected is near.
Yeah.
And she gets saved. Very Deus Ex Machina like by two dudes, Tommy and Joel. And they're like, and this one guy's like, I'm Tommy and this is Joel. And Abby's like, oh shit. And they take her back to their mansion and they're all sort of caught in this building. And she's like, well, my friends are in a house near here. And she's like, we could go back there and we'll be safe there. We have a safe perimeter. So they run back. Her friends help them get inside. They secure the perimeter. They burn a bunch of infected at the fence. They all get inside. And then now they have Joel and Tommy trapped. And they knock Tommy out. She does terrible things to Joel. and it cuts to Ellie and like Ellie and Dina are out looking for them. They come out after to try and relieve Joel and Tommy. Or no, Ellie and Dina are at Eugene's secret hideout, waiting out the storm. His secret weed base.
Pot hideout.
Yeah, which is pretty great. I hope we get to visit that. Which is where there's just a bunch of dead weed because Eugene's obviously been dead for a while. They're having a really lovely, tender moment, and they obviously are just trying to ride out the storm. And eventually, they find out that Joel and Tommy didn't check in from their patrol. And so Ellie goes out looking. She finds the house where Abby and her people are. She sneaks in. She hears them beating on Joel, and she ends up getting captured and witnessing Joel's demise. And she gets there's sort of a debate, and they end up knocking her out and leaving her with Joel's dead body and an unconscious Tommy, and until Dina finds her later.
I mean, that sounds like it could be an episode of HBO if they wanted to, but do you think they're going to squeeze all that in?
And it's horrifying, and I think that there is enough time in the next episode to do some setup, right? To do like a mm-hmm. first act of the episode setup where maybe we get some more Joel and Gale, we get some more stuff in Jackson, and then we get Dina and Ellie out on their little patrol and having their moment, and then the snowstorm hits, and we get Abby having to run from the horde, and like all of a sudden she's with Joel and Tommy and shit goes down, and then the episode ends with like from Ellie's perspective her getting knocked out at right after Joel gets killed. Like I would not be surprised if that's how the episode ends. And the other thing that leads me to believe, two other things that I think lead me to believe. One, there's almost none of like a snowstorm based stuff in the look ahead, right?
That's
and
true.
It's not a next time on preview that they dropped after this week's episode. It's like a look ahead in the season. There are a couple shots of like Pedro in a snowstorm, but almost nothing that would say that it's from this episode, this next episode. Although they did, I believe, drop the title Through the Valley, which, oh boy, that could be it. And also it's a Mark Millad directed episode, which Mark Millad, a veteran of some pretty big effects driven episodes on stuff like Thrones, I think would be the guy that you would call in if you're going to do something where it's going to be a very big sort of chaotic, because this is going to have a lot of moving parts if they do it like the video game, especially leading up to the big dramatic moment where they're in the house and Abby's crew is beating on Joel with a golf club, or specifically Abby is beating on Joel with a golf club. Because there's like the scene where Abby is being chased by a zombie or infected. Sorry. Abby is being chased by infected. There's this really intense scene where then Abby and Tommy and Joel are trying to survive, which is like a lot of mixed emotions, right? Because you're like rooting for them to survive. But the entire time it's like, oh shit, this is Abby with Joel. And she knows that she's with Joel, but Joel and Tommy have no idea who she is. They're just like, we found this girl. We're just trying to save her. We're just trying to get out of here alive. We're being besieged from all sides. They're like at like this resort center, and we're just trying to get the hell out of here together, and they're like fighting off infected left and right, and it's this like wild sequence.
I think you're right. So the benefit of doing the podcast when we do, I'm going to throw this in the Riverside chat, but it looks like we got some stills.
Ooh.
Some official stills from season 2 episode 2 earlier today. And it looks like it is exactly what you're describing. We have some Abby behind a fence with a whole bunch of infected pushing in on it. We have Joel inside somewhere, but it looks like he has been recently outside in the snow. He has a gun. We have Ellie looking kind of shocked at something, but in a parka. We have Jesse. We have Tommy. Also looks like he's recently been outside in the snow.
Yes. This shot of Abby in the fence is directly yes. from the game. Like you squeeze through a fence and like the infected are like pushing you against the fence.
Yeah. Oh, and then the only thing that is sort of not in what you just talked about, but still looks like it's in this episode, is we have Tommy talking to the entire Jackson community. And there's a poster in the back that says work assignments. So it looks like everybody's getting a task, maybe for an upcoming snowstorm or for an upcoming horde. They look calm. I'm going to say upcoming snowstorm.
Sure.
But everybody could be needs like to, the you beginning know,
of the, like I said, there's plenty of time to like set up, because like the whole Abby, Joel, Tommy sequence is sort of comes together really quickly. And I could see that being like the last 10, 15 minutes of a 60 minute episode where like it just sneaks up on everybody as the storm. Cause it's like in the game, it sort of sneaks up on you as well. Like you're playing mostly as Ellie and you're having this like really sort of tender moment with Dina. And then you're playing as Abby and you're honestly not thinking that you're going to get anywhere near Joel at this point. They're pretty far away from Jackson. They're just sort of scoping it out, and it doesn't seem like, you know, they're sort of formulating their plan. But this still of her behind the fence, Dave, is very triggering. Like this is like right before she meets Joel, and then it happens like immediately.
Well, then it looks like you might be right, Neil. Looks like you might be right. And
I think that's,
we will be celebrating 420 in the saddest way this year.
And it's extremely bold. And I think for, you know, the game, it's a psychotically bold way to open up your game. I think that, you know, since we're in the storm, I'll say some things that make it brilliant. I think that it's going to bring a lot of there's a potential for this to be an amazing performance moment for Caitlin Dever, for Bella Ramsey. Like it's a hugely emotional moment for Ellie's character. I think that if they execute it well, they don't have to do anything clever with it. They just have to execute it the same way they did in the video game, because it's horrifying the way they execute it in the video game. So we'll get like the Joel part of it is horrifying, but he's also like very like resigned to it when it starts to happen. Like he immediately kind of knows what's happening, and he doesn't seem to really care what the reason is, but he's like, obviously I wronged you in some way, so like let's get it over with. And Abby is terrifying, and it immediately makes you sort of terrified of her and hate her, but also understand what she's going through. And the Ellie part of it is crushing. So I think that it could be a real leveling up moment for this series. And I don't want to like, it's, people are going to throw around the Red Wedding as a comparison, right, from Thrones, because right. it's a huge event of sort of massive storytelling proportion that people know is coming and is going to be hugely shocking for people who don't know it's coming. And I'm sure that there are going to be plenty of people who know it's coming who are going to be watching their friends and loved ones who don't know it's coming, and probably secretly recording them to be able to post it on social media. The shock, and that's fine. That's part of the fun. And I think that's all going to be great. And I do think that that combined with the fact that the first episode had a nice big bump in viewership over last year's premiere, over the last season premiere, this show may jump even further, with especially with audiences who aren't familiar with what happened in the game. I also think that it's not a bad decision to stick with doing it early, because then you just get it out of the way. Right.
Well, and they have the power of flashback. So right. like Pedro still, Pascal's in for the whole season.
There's still plenty of time to spend with Pedro. And there's still plenty of, you know, this event is in the game what propels the story forward. It is what is sort of the core emotional event of the story that informs everything else that's going to happen, right? We're set off on this road trip with Ellie and Dina. They're going to Seattle. That's how we meet the WLF. That's how we meet the Scars. That's, you know, and this is all very prominent in the look ahead, right? The bald people are the Scars. Jeffrey Wright's character is the head of the WLF. We're going to go to Seattle. We're going to get a lot of that storyline. That's all extremely important. We learn so much more about Abby as we go along. That's going to give us more context about her. And I think it's, you know, I was reminded this as I was playing the game. I think it's kind of important that Abby does this horrible thing before we know anything more about her. Like, the show has already given us more information about Abby than the game does. Like, they've already established that she's part of the Fireflies, which the game does not. Mm-hmm. The game is just like, you barely learn that her name is Abby by the time she kills Joel. So it's like, you know, it takes you a while to really learn who she is, and the fact that she was connected to the Salt Lake City thing. Like, it's a real mystery as to why she's even pissed off at Joel. So the show has gone above and beyond in giving us the backstory. So I think it's ready to do this thing, and it's ready to set this season off. And I think that it's going to be a big deal. And I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be kind of an epic moment in prestige television history. And if they execute it just the same way that the video game executes it, it's perfect the way it is. And they don't need to do anything else with it. It's like the whole, there's so many perfect dramatic beats to it. Like Abby realizing, the terror of Abby being chased around by the infected, her realizing that she's with Tommy and Joel, to her sort of manipulating Tommy and Joel back to her place, to the immediate turn of them capturing them. And then obviously she comes through on her promise to do it slowly, to the fact that Ellie shows up as well. It's so gnarly. And then
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a good point, because like, you and I have been assuming they were going to mix more of the Abby side into this, but it sounds like, given the titles of the episodes that we have and your description of it, that they might split it down the middle again. We might get a Abby centric season 3, which feels like a heavy lift to me, but I suppose that's a problem for another year of television.
Well, and it might be, you know, we'll talk about this more in the next few weeks, especially as I continue to play through the game again. But there is a significant portion of the game after Joel's death where Abby goes away, and you're just, as the player, you're playing as Ellie, and you're just like pissed off at Abby. You're just like, I'm gonna go find and kill Abby. Like, she's the villain of the game. And it isn't until much later where the game is like, oh no, you're gonna play as Abby again. We're gonna force you to empathize with this character. And you know, you sit there as I did the first time I played it, and you're like, no, game, fuck you. no way you're gonna do this to me. You know, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. And I think, again, I'm excited to see Caitlin Dever take it on, because it's a very tough lift. And it's one of the things that makes me extremely sad about the reaction to the second game, because I think people, very toxic gamer fans, gave Laura Bradley, the performer who played Abby in voice and mocap, a really hard time. But her performance is incredible, and she pulls off one of my favorite performances in any piece of media, I think.
I mean, they gave Laura Bradley a tough time, but the character model was based off of a real actress named Jocelyn Mettler. They drove her off the internet.
Yeah.
Period. So, like, yeah, I hope this time we do better with Abby, not only for Caitlin Dever, but just for people's understanding of the story. It's going to be tough, I guess, starting next week.
Yeah.
To try to be like, no, guys, no, we're going to get there.
Let's go.
while we're just as a way to sort of like close off, I've been trying not to let this like story leak out, but I am very interested in like our current climate. Like what motivates violence in like an interesting way, and what makes us feel good about violence versus is violence ever sort of necessary? I'm very excited that the game is definitely, or the game, that the show is definitely taking this on, because, you know, as we talked about a little bit in our preview episode, the power of the game is it makes you inhabit Abby, like you're talking about. I hope that we have as productive a conversation as fans of the show, because I do think, you know, for some people in their lives, they're going to ask these questions without the safety of a fictional property. So it's much better to, I think, consider them amongst a well-made fictional property. And that's what we love about prestige television here on Storm of Spoilers. Two adaptations, two purposes, two perfectly valid takes on the story. Neil, it's great to be back.
Hell yeah. Can't wait for next week.
Yeah, next week, season two is going to continue with episode 2, which we think we know the title of, but let's not worry about it. It will be 420, and in honor of Eugene and his dank weed, we can't wait to see you there. Until then, head out, avoid those stalkers, and be excellent to each other.